Hello and welcome to the Cinema Clash. I am Charlie Jewell, and alongside me as always is...
Hannah Buchdahl.
All right, Hannah, I am excited about this long Memorial Day weekend, because we have two big blockbusters to talk about, and two relatively small independent films.
One of which I saw blockbuster-wise, and I actually saw both of the indies that we'll be talking about.
I am so proud of you.
I know.
But first, we had a bet last week. We bet between, what was it, Angry Birds and what was the other one? I picked Angry Birds, but that would win the weekend. And I spotted you $10 million.
The Nice Guys and...
Or Neighbors 2.
And Neighbors 2 would split. I figured they would both, you know, come out about the same, which they did.
Whatever. Neighbors 2 killed Nice Guys. No, none of you out there listening went to see The Nice Guys, and shame on you for that.
Yeah, I mean, that's just it. I was going with rooting for the better movies of the week.
Never overestimate American audiences.
And kids' movies, as you said. I just will hopefully someday learn my lesson. One, just not to bother betting.
Well, don't bet against kid movies,
and I will
even
not
if they're
bet,
about Angry Birds.
I know. I won't bet against kid movies, and also, though, it's worth it, though, once in a while, because then I can find fine wines like I brought for you tonight.
You have I don't know where you shop, but you have a knack for picking wines. I think 2 weeks ago when you brought wine, it was Dark Horse,
mm-hmm.
because there was a movie out that week called Dark Horse. And this week, and I'm not going to take this as a personal attack, but the wine is called Wise Ass.
You're not going to take it as a personal
I prefer
attack.
Not to take it as a personal attack.
I was very proud of myself when I stumbled upon that one.
But should red wine burn going down, Hannah?
It does this not burn going down. Your wife tried it. She agrees with me. It's a
she
fine wine.
She agrees with everybody.
Wine.
She's very agreeable.
It's an absolutely fine wine, and it's worth it just for the label itself.
Well, you know what is not worth it?
What?
Alice Through the Looking Glass, the sequel to the box office annihilating 2010 film by Tim Burton, Alice in Wonderland. Tim Burton's gone now. He brought in a new director, Alice Through the Looking Glass.
He's alive. He's just not doing
it. Well, he's
this
a producer
movie.
On the film. But Alice in the Looking Through the Looking Glass stinks.
Oh, I don't think it stinks. I did not see the first one. So for somebody who is coming into it without having seen the original, then it's a little more difficult probably to know these characters. I read up a little bit on them so that I wouldn't be completely blind going in. But I found some redeeming qualities in it. Visually, it's stunning.
Visually, it's okay. But if you saw the first one, you would be a little disappointed because the first one had, since it was Tim Burton, you could see some Beetlejuice in there. You could see some Edward Scissorhands. I mean, it had his aesthetic. This is directed by a man named James Bobbin. He did the two most recent Muppet movies, The Muppets and Muppets Most Wanted, bunch of episodes of Flight of the Conchords and Da Ali G Show, which is why Sacha Baron Cohen is in here actually playing Time is a man.
Well, and that's the best character, I would say, in this entire movie. So I think getting Sacha Baron Cohen in there was actually a boon for him, because I really found his character very funny, and it was just, he embodies, the whole point is that he is the embodiment of time. I mean, it just provides an opportunity to have a lot of puns about time.
He waits for no man.
He waits for no man. And, you know, you can, I like, there's a scene where the guy sort of goes up to time and's like, I've got time on my side. It was cute. I mean, I just thought it was a fine family-friendly PG movie that was visually really pleasing. And, Tim Burton is sometimes a bit of an acquired taste, and so I think for people who generally don't like Tim Burton treatment on animated movies, or sometimes animated, but also live action, they might actually like this one even a little better. It's just a different take on that kind of story, and it's a slightly different visual treatment. But I thought it was fine. I didn't think it stunk. I mean, the movies that stunk are things like, you know, Norm of the North, as we like to say.
I agree. No, this is far better than Norm of the North, but it's still not good.
But I don't think it's... I wouldn't put it in the not good category. And the lead actress who plays Alice, if you can help me with her last name, Mia Wasikowska is a really good actress. She's very versatile. I remember seeing her in a mediocre movie called Tracks, where she traipses across the outback and the desert for months on end.
That looked like a tough job, by the way.
It was a very
she pretty much
grueling,
walked across Australia.
Yeah, it was a very grueling role, and an interesting movie, but it was not a very good movie, but she was very good in it, and I remember that. And so she is very watchable in this. She's a very strong female lead character. She is.
I like that they did that, by the way. It's a really hard opening. She's a sea captain in 1875, and you know, when you think of sea captains in 1875, you think of like Russell Crowe on Master and Commander, not Mia Wasikowska, and she's out running pirates in China. And she comes back to London, and she's so confident. She knows what she wants. She's determined. And the rug gets pulled out from her. Her mom's poor, so she, like, sells her house and puts her boat in hock. And so Alice just needs to get out of town.
Yeah, I mean, this movie tries to there are so many morals. The end of the movie, you're just like, what is the moral of the story is, you know, you need to pay attention to every minute and every second. Time is so valuable.
Although the foreshadowing is atrocious.
It's throughout.
She's fighting with her mom about, her mom's saying, you're running out of time. You need to get married. You need to figure out what you want to do. So she's like, I don't want to be like you. And when she's on the boat, the first mate, he doesn't want to take her orders. He's like, that's impossible. She says, you know what I feel about word. Nothing's impossible. And guess what? It comes up again.
It comes up many times, the impossible word. And things like, the only thing worth doing is what we do for others. And, you know, it's all kind of sweet and sappy in its own sort of weird kind of down the rabbit hole way. Mm. So, again, I thought it was fine. If people enjoyed the first one and if they want to kind of revisit that and they need a family movie to go see, then I think
then
this
go
one,
see The Jungle Book, yes.
Well, if they've already seen The Jungle Book, because as you say, these kid movies, this one's above an Angry Birds. I mean, it's
better
for older kids. It's better, and it's something that can appeal to the older kids, and it's a little heavy-handed on the messaging, and it just keeps loading up on the messaging.
Your kids won't have to ask you what something means.
I know, but that's not such a bad thing all the time when you see so many of these movies where the messages are terrible or it's not a movie that you really would want to talk about the morals and the themes of the movie. This one at least has its heart in the right place.
Yeah, but it doesn't have its story in the right place. She goes to Wonderland. They lure her back because Hatter, the Mad Hatter, played by Johnny Depp, is sad because he thinks his family is alive. No one believes him, and he's sadding to death. He's actually dying because he's sad. And Alice, who doesn't really believe me either, says, "You know what? I'm gonna go check for you. I'm gonna go find out." Because you're so sad. That's annoying. And that's, I think even like 6-year-olds might find that stupid.
I don't think they'll find it stupid. But the idea that she then, I didn't quite understand how and why she could just get away with stealing this chronosphere, which basically was a time machine that would allow her to go back in time.
And not thinking of the consequences of ripping apart time.
Yeah, so that was a problem. that was a missed opportunity for telling a different moral a little better, that if you...
She's actually kind of selfish when
she is
it.
A little selfish with trying... But she's selfish, but for the right reason. She's really trying to help a friend. And things just kind of unravel and go awry.
Well, when she goes back in time during the time travel scene, that's one of the ideas I actually kind of liked. They look at time as an ocean, as waves, and that's actually really visually appealing. That's probably the strongest part of the movie, is when she's traveling through time and you see these time bubbles bubble up. I got a kick out of that. And you mentioned Sacha Baron Cohen. Usually, if he's in a movie, he's the loopiest guy out there. He goes nuts. Think Borat and Bruno. And he's not here. And no. I think it points to an overall problem with the acting. I did not like the acting in this movie. Johnny Depp went off the deep end. He was, I don't know what he was doing. He was worse than he was in the previous Alice in Wonderland.
I see. I always think of him pretty much acting the same way in all these movies where he's so heavily made up. And the same with Helena Bonham Carter.
She overdid it.
But I think that's intentional. I think that exaggeration.
And Anne Hathaway. Floating around.
I did not quite understand Anne Hathaway's place in this movie at all. But again, I didn't particularly love it. I did not particularly hate it. I just think that there is a potential audience for it, for the older kids who deserve to have something that's that just means well and isn't violent and graphic.
Go see The Jungle Book. There's a lot of people who haven't seen that yet. Go see that.
Okay. So, I think it was fine.
Yeah. I think more people are on my side on this one. It's pretty low on Rotten Tomatoes.
It's pretty low on Rotten Tomatoes, but I wouldn't rush out and see it. But I don't think it's painful to sit through the way some other movies sometimes are. that you go for the sake of the kids.
And even though Alice in Wonderland, the first one, made over $1 billion at the box office, I don't think this is going to win the weekend.
I'm not going to bet you.
I think the next one will. The next one is a bigger blockbuster, actually. It's the new X-Men movie, X-Men Apocalypse. And I know you're so excited about the X-Men.
I can't wait to hear what you thought about it, because I kind of didn't get to see this one.
This is the sixth X-Men film, but it's kind of like the third film in the second trilogy. It's all the younger actors, so no Patrick Stewart, no Halle Berry. This is the new guard with James McAvoy
Fassbender. And I love Michael Fassbender.
And I'm fine with him too, but you know, you just got to look at these X-Men characters. Okay, the next generation. And we're back in time again. It's 1983 because like they cheated in the last film. They went back in time and erased, because they changed the past, so they erased everything that happened in the previous like five films. That was Days of Future Past, which actually was an awesome film.
Yeah.
And it was much better than this one, actually. This one's not terrible. I didn't love it, but I liked it okay. It's probably on par with like the first X-Men that came out in 2000. It's directed by Bryan Singer. They brought him back again. He did the first two. And he did not do the third one or First Class, and they brought him back for Days of Future Past, and he just did this one, Apocalypse. Well, probably the most interesting thing about Apocalypse is the villain, your boy, Oscar Isaac, inside Llewyn Davis,
yes.
Star Wars, Force Awakens. He's now in all these blockbuster series. He's now in X-Men as like the biggest, baddest villain ever, and the oldest. We meet him in 3600 BC, and by then he's already been around for like 10,000 years.
Wow.
He's the ultimate, he could be the first mutant ever, and his thing is he kills other mutants and takes their powers, and he does that, and he lives forever by doing that. But things go awry in 3600 BC. The temple falls down, the pyramid falls on top of him, and he doesn't wake up until 1983. And you know why?
Because he's Captain America.
Rose Byrne.
Oh.
Rose Byrne, my girl, wakes him up on accident.
She
didn't mean it. Rose Byrne wakes up Oscar Isaac and pretty much almost destroys the world.
Okay. And you're giving me a hard time about the fact that Alice, you know, took things a little selfishly out of control going back in time.
She did an accident.
Yeah. But now, for somebody who's sort of seen one of those here and there, would you be able to really just pick up and see this one if you haven't seen the previous?
I was going to mention that you need to know your X-Men to really get anything out of this film. You need to really know the current trilogy from X-Men First Class and Days of Future Past. You need to know that because they are referencing Cuba, the Cuban Missile Crisis, and DC, what they did in 1973, Peter Dinklage, that whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't really need to see the first three films that came out in 2000, 2003, one with where we really were introduced to Wolverine. You really don't need to see those because they don't exist anymore because time change happened and erased them. But all the X-Men characters, almost all, show up in their younger forms. They're all here. It's okay. Some of the former good guys are now bad guys, then become good. Switching sides a little bit. And there's so many, it almost doesn't fit. You've seen that before in other movies, I think. There's so many characters, no one really gets their due.
Well, you talked about that a little bit with Captain America and superhero fatigue. And so I kind of felt that a little bit. I wanted to see this movie, but I don't understand now why, if it was okay, why they only screened it for the critics on a midday on a Monday screening.
Because they knew. The studio, Marvel, Disney, knew, okay, X-Men Apocalypse is not as strong as the last one. We know it's going to be middling. We're going to just push it out there. No big screenings. Let's just get it out there. And, you know, it's probably the best move they could have done. Good weekend to open it. Yeah, built-in audience. People want to go see movies on Memorial Day. Beat the heat. Michael Fassbender's probably the best. He's Magneto. Man, what a tragic guy. Something, you think he's on the straight and narrow. Something always happens to Michael Fassbender. And, oh, man, he gets it again.
Wow.
It's so sad. I mean, he's the world's most wanted man after he ripped up RFK Stadium and moved it over to the White House.
Oh, right.
Remember that? So he's hiding out now in Poland. And remember, he was in Auschwitz, like when he was a kid. So I don't know why he's hanging around in Poland. But he's hanging around in Poland, and he's got a new wife and a lovely, like, 7-year-old daughter. And you don't even want to know. Oh, my God. So, of course, he just wants to blow up the world again.
Poor Magneto. It never ends well for him.
So the bad guy, the villain, should be so interesting. I mean, this guy can do anything he wants, and he kind of does. But he really just they shackle him a little bit. Like, he can, when he wants to, he can just turn someone into a pile of salt. And he does, but of course, when he's fighting the X-Men, he just, you know, traps a couple. Like, you could turn them into salt right now, dude. Just do it. Just do it. You know, and he's holding himself
back. But
then
the movie would be over.
And Jennifer Lawrence is hanging out again.
Oh, right, right.
I'm not feeling this. It's fun. To quote Hannah, it's nice, it's fun, you know, but there's no weight to it. It's okay. It's better than Alice.
Then maybe I should see it, because maybe I would like it a little better.
It's 2.5 hours long. You wouldn't like that?
No, I was okay even with like a Batman versus Superman that was over 2.5 hours.
It's on par with Batman.
And so I think if it moves, it's all about the pacing. And if it moves well, and if the story grabs you, and if the acting's good, then I don't pay as much attention to time. If it's one of those indies that you make me watch that's a screening link and I'm 10 minutes in and dying, then that's a different story.
Well, let's talk about one of those indies. I think we saw this weeks ago, so weeks I know you're going to have to pull from your memory bank on this one. We saw Maggie's Plan, starring the wonderful Greta Gerwig and the always intriguing Ethan Hawke. What did you think of Maggie's Plan?
I liked it. I actually did like it. I don't think many people will find it or seek it out or see it, but the acting was excellent. I definitely like Ethan Hawke in this kind of role, as opposed to, you know, when he was playing the trumpet player.
What did Chet Baker.
When he was Chet Baker in Born to Be Blue. That one, that kind of role for him didn't really do it for me. In this one, he's more, I would say, similar in vibe to the characters that he plays in, like, Before Sunset and After Midnight or Before Midnight.
Actually, you know, this is a very New York story, very New York centric, very cosmopolitan. And so you remember young Ethan Hawke in Dead Poet Society? I could see him growing up from that and becoming this guy.
Yeah.
He's a wannabe writer. He's like, I'm going to write that novel. And 7 years later, he's like, I'm going to write that novel. I'm almost done. I'm 900 pages in. I'm going to get that novel done.
Yeah, so I mean, the gist of the story for this movie is that you've got this woman, Maggie, who I believe maybe she's supposed to be in her 30s.
Like young 30s, maybe.
Early 30s, and she's very an independent woman, and she decides that she wants to have a kid, and she's going to be artificially inseminated by with the help of this pickle entrepreneur that she went to college with, who's very smart, a guy named Guy, I believe. And so just when she's about to undergo that procedure and do all of that, she, of course, falls in love with this Ethan Hawke character, who is married to this Danish?
No, she's
Denmark.
Isn't French,
she from
isn't
Denmark?
She?
I thought she was from Denmark.
Her accent is actually so perplexing.
It's so
weird. You can't place it.
But it's played by she's played by Julianne Moore as this brilliant some kind of academic.
Even Ethan Hawke's character, he's kind of a professor.
An
academic
and
he's too. A crypto-anthropologist, something like that.
Yeah, what did I wrote it down because I could not remember what the heck it was called.
It's
a ficto-critical anthropologist is what he...
of course he is.
He is. And, but so it takes what would sort of be a normal, what you would think would be a normal romantic comedy or dramedy, and kind of turns it on its head. And so she falls in love with this married professor and essentially ends up having a kid by him. And so I don't want to give away too much of the plot twists and turns because there are some interesting, somewhat unpredictable elements to this
story. I think we can
talk
about what Maggie's plan is,
but
though.
The fast forward.
Like Ethan Hawke leaves his wife, Julianne Moore. They split up, you know, it happens. He moves in with Greta Gerwig, Maggie, and you know what? He's getting on her nerves.
Yeah.
He's getting on her. He's a stay-at-home dad writing his novel. She's working. And he says, hey, that's what you wanted. And you know what? So Maggie's plan is, why don't you go back to your wife now?
Yeah.
So she's going to get them back together. And she gets Julianne Moore in on it. And so it actually becomes a very interesting sort of love triangle. That's quirky. You don't really see that.
It's quirky. And quirky is definitely how I would describe this movie. It's a bit of a throwback. It's contemporary, but it has this very old-fashioned kind of feel to it in the way it plays out. It's got that...
I'm feeling Woody Allen in there.
This is
Woody Allen movie,
Woody
a Noah Allen-esque. Baumbach movie, big time. It's directed by Rebecca Miller, and she... it's an adapted screenplay from a novel that's not out yet. It's a section of a longer novel that's not out yet. And the author said, you know what, this would be, it might make a good film. Rebecca, why don't you take a look at this? And the film's out and the novel's not out yet.
And she's married to Daniel Day-Lewis. I did not know that until...
The author? Not Rebecca.
Rebecca.
Rebecca Miller's married
Rebecca
to...
Rebecca Miller is married to Daniel Day-Lewis.
That's crazy.
Yep.
He should have been in this movie.
I know. So it is a very strong cast. I do like that part about it. It's got the typical, like, Saturday Night Live characters. Bill Hader and Maya Rudolph show up as the...
And Bill Hader's very good.
As Maggie's best friends who try to kind of keep her grounded and talk some sense into her. Bill Hader and Maya Rudolph, they're both really good in these kinds of movies. They really haven't done any duds that I can remember. They somehow always manage to pull
off
their
roles. Bill Hader was the pig in Angry Birds.
I don't count an animated. he was fine. His voiceover was fine in Angry Birds.
Maya Rudolph was the counselor
in Angry
Birds. And
she was
in
that
Birds.
Too. So in live action film, they've done quite well.
Okay.
So Maggie's Plan, I think, is an intriguing indie. I think it's more mainstream than a lot of others. So.
More mainstream than the next one we're talking about.
Yeah, so I'm okay with putting it out there for people who might be looking, who are fans of indies and romantic dramas with a quirky twist, who need to, you know, who want to find a movie that also will satisfy the people who tend to like mainstream movies more. And so it's on the border. I think it walks the line between a mainstream and an indie for me, an arty movie.
Yeah, I think I like it a little bit better than you do. There's a large portion of the movie-going population this week that does not want to see Alice Through the Looking Glass nor X-Men Apocalypse, and I think Maggie's Plan would be right up their alley if they only could learn about it and had a theater near them where they could see it.
Yes, whereas this next one you're going to talk about, absolutely no one will see.
It is small is an understatement. It's a slow grower, you could say, but it's only 74 minutes long and she's got a gun. The movie moves. I'm just saying it's going into like one city per week and it's still gonna be playing in September, but in that one city.
It's just I can't imagine this one catching on with anyone other than the art house crowd that will absolutely go seek it out. I mean, it's not bad.
Let's tell them what it is.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
from Mexico, and it's called A Monster with a Thousand Heads. And it's by a director named Rodrigo Pla. And it's about an insurance company. The insurance company is the monster. And the man is dying. A wife's husband is dying, and the wife is desperate. He's going to die, insurance company, unless you give him the proper medicine. Sign off on these forms. Get him into this drug trial. Get him the medicine he needs. It's proven. And they're saying, no, we're not going to do that. So she's desperate. She goes to her doctor, and he's ducking her. And he doesn't want to talk to her. He doesn't want to deal with it because they're an insurance company. They have to deny a certain amount of claims. And she knows that. She goes to his house, the doctor's house. He's getting ready to go to a squash game. He says, leave me alone. She pulls out a gun, Hannah. She pulls out a gun and says, you know what, buddy? Sign this form.
And she's got her teenage son with her this whole time.
So this drama, this medical drama, this heart-wrenching drama turns into a thriller. I dug it.
I figured you did and that you would. I was okay with it because from a sociopolitical standpoint, it is a very interesting theme and message about fraud and mismanagement in your healthcare industry. And it's a Mexican movie, so it's in Spanish with English subtitles. I think that's important to point out. It is only 75 minutes, which made it, for me, something I could actually watch from beginning to end, which I did. And
I like how movies have to be sitcom length for you to watch.
They just have to keep me engaged, that's all. And so, first of all, I think A Monster with a Thousand Heads, I think it loses something from the title because I don't think anyone
I'm gonna guess
will
the title
remember
doesn't
the
translate
title.
Directly.
It doesn't translate, and I just think that actually is going to work against it a little bit.
Doesn't the Thousand Heads that resemble, she has to go through a chain. Like the doctor says, I can sign this, but you also need this guy. And then you need that guy and the CEO, and then you need the notary public. And so the Thousand Heads is like, wow, I have to do a lot of things with this gun to get this form signed.
Yeah, I get it. And I think anyone who liked a movie like Michael Moore's Sicko documentary, I think it's trying to draw on a lot of what prompted Obamacare and people getting denied coverage, and if you have a pre-existing condition, and who's making these choices. It's not always a medical-based choice. It's very often based on, you know,
money
encounters.
Yeah.
And so I applaud what the movie was going for. I just found it to be a rather very slow, depressing, very dark indie. I mean, it's
dark,
dark, yeah, in terms of the just the vibe of the movie. And
well, the director did two things that I thought was original. Like, you just don't see this. When you don't just follow her, you see the action through bystanders. She confronts the doctor in a parking garage, but you're not seeing them. You're not, well, you're seeing them, but you're not hearing them. You're seeing it through the windshield of a guy watching them, a bystander. And this is because we don't flash forward to the court scene later on. We only hear it. We hear a prosecutor asking the guy through the windshield questions. What did you see? What do you think was going on? Then you hear a secretary. What did you see? And you're seeing if their memories match up. And it's fascinating. You know you're listening to a future court proceeding, but in any other movie, you would flash forward and then flash back. Not here. Good move, Mr. Pla.
Yeah, it was well crafted, and I enjoyed... I don't know if enjoy is the right word. I endured it because I did feel for what this woman was going through, and to see her, I think he's like 16, her son is with her,
yeah,
through a lot of this, and he's caught between wanting to help make his dad better and wanting to support his mother and keep her safe in the midst of all of this. But in terms of a responsible parenthood, dragging him along.
She's desperate. She's desperate.
She is so desperate. So it's a tale of desperation. The whole movie is just a 75-minute long, desperate times calling for desperate measures kind of movie. I knew I could see where it was going.
There's a wrench in the end.
I absolutely knew.
Saw that coming?
I totally saw it coming. And so that, I don't know if that was good or bad that I saw that coming and it played out in some ways how I thought. The very last scene, though,
What'd you think of her?
She was good because she really... She comes off as multi-layered because you really do see that she's a nice person and she's trying to follow the rules and she's trying to do everything that she's supposed to do.
Well, they go to
you just see her kind of snap.
They go to a computer shop and they still pay for everything.
Yeah.
And she actually says thank you.
Right. And so she is, you can tell that she is a good person at heart who just was caught in these horrendous circumstances. And the villains are definitely the people who are involved in making these decisions from the insurance company. Here's somebody who's been paying all of her premiums. She's done everything exactly the way she was supposed to. And then when she and her husband desperately need to benefit from this insurance plan that they've been paying for all these years, they're denied. And it just puts her at her wit's end. And she kind of snaps. And it's heart-wrenching. And so it's, if you like the theme of that movie and you kind of want a darker indie
it's darker,
that's thought-provoking, then it's good. I don't think many people will want to see it necessarily, or will seek it out, or will find it.
Well, her name is Hana Ralui. She's a veteran Mexican theater actress, and this is her first movie.
Oh, well, she pulls it off, I think. Especially, I really liked the very last scene. Was very interesting, well done.
Is that the thing on the bench?
Yeah. It just was kind of a surprise final moment.
I didn't think it was going to end like that. I expected,
yeah.
I'm making a hand motion here,
yeah,
so you can't see that in here, but that's what I thought was going to happen.
Yeah, so... The fact that it's only 75 minutes makes it...
I love that that's the highlight of your week.
No,
this movie was only 75
minutes. I don't think
minutes.
It'll be... I think it'll be one of those ones... I think that will make it accessible for people when it's available in other forms. Mm-hmm. So when it's on... If you put it into a Netflix queue, or you see that it's going to... You know, that it's showing up on some indie channel, then it's worth watching.
Well, compared
because
to some
not
of the,
you're not having to invest a ton of time.
Compared to some of the foreign films I've already made you watch this year, which were mostly French, I believe.
Yes.
Like, compared to Marguerite. I know there's completely different genres. Marguerite's this stuffy French film and much longer. Which one would you rather see? The stuffy, long French film, but accessible because it's about that singer that you thought was funny? Or this short, kind of thriller, but dark Mexican film? Like, what's your style, Hannah?
Oh, ultimately, I would have to go with something like a Marguerite because it's still more accessible to more people. And it had some elements of, it was more entertaining. And so I think that's where the difference sometimes lies, is that if I'm feeling more entertained by one of these indies, ultimately, then it's more satisfying to me than one where I just watch it and I just feel a little sad at the end. And that one, I just felt sad.
Yeah. So that's two blockbusters and two indies, but this is a long Memorial Day weekend where, you know what, if you don't want to leave the house and you didn't go to the beach this weekend, or if you're at the beach and you're tired of your family and you want to rent a movie, Hannah, what is out on DVD this week?
Not much. Not much good. But I would say this is the kind of week where if you really desperately wanted to see Zoolander 2 because you saw the first one and you just want a screwball comedy revisiting these characters.
Not screwball, it's slapstick awful.
Slapstick. But then Zoolander 2 is, I would say, a fine choice if you were just sort of putting that one on the back burner and meant to catch up with it at some point. It's harmless Memorial Day weekend kind of fluff. There was How to Be Single, which didn't Ooh. Have the best message from what I can recall. That one was Dakota Johnson and Rebel Wilson, and it's R-rated, so a lot of the teenage girls, I think, want to see that one, but it does not send the best message for the teens.
I think my wife wants to see that one pretty much.
And it aims to be really seriously funny, but it kind of misses the mark on what it's trying to say, and it's about just being in a relation, being in relationships, and whether you're better off sometimes being alone versus getting mixed up in a bad relationship. And it was just, I called it, you know, ultimately forgettable.
I think I called it a pile of trash.
Yeah, I called it a cinematic one-night stand is what I called it. Ultimately forgettable, if not regrettable.
A third one out that we both saw, and I didn't like it very much, but I liked it better than the first two we just mentioned, is another Disney film, but one of those based on a true stories, feel-good Disney films, The Finest Hours, about the Massachusetts Coast Guard. And they're saving the oil tanker that's split in half out there off the bay.
Oh, yes. Now I recall.
Remember Casey Affleck
stuck
out there
in the storm. Turning all the headlights on, trying to find help the boat get home.
Chris Pine had to crawl in that boat there and go get him.
So Chris Pine fans might enjoy it, although this is not Chris Pine in his most attractive role.
What would you say if I based a film on a female's attractiveness?
Like Rose Byrne?
Exactly.
Exactly. Enough said. That's why the wine is called Wise Ass.
Continue. Don't disparage poor old Rose Byrne.
So, anyway, so with The Finest Hours, if I can recall, I don't know if it'll translate very well.
You know
well
why
on
you can't remember
screen.
About it? Because it's so forgettable.
It was very forgettable. And yeah, I guess if you. For Memorial Day weekend, if you're just looking for something that has some sort of military aspect to it,
oh,
to some degree, it's a stretch.
Eric Bana, remember, was in it, and he hid in the office all the time. Right, we're like, what is Eric Bana doing in this movie, hiding in that stupid office?
So I don't know what the moral of this story is. Maybe it's you should just go and have a good barbecue and
go see Maggie's Plan.
And that's maybe, you know, salute the troops. say thank you for your service to some folks. You should find your local Memorial
Day parade on Sunday. I'm tempted to go down to Constitution Avenue here in D.C. and see it. Arlington Cemetery is having their annual at the amphitheater. That's a pretty moving ceremony to watch the unknown soldier thing. So there are plenty of things to do on your Memorial Day weekend, but this is your cinematic choices. To recap those choices, Alice Through the Looking Glass, shame.
I think it'll do fine, though, as a family film, especially if Angry Birds did so well last week. I am counting on Alice doing okay.
X-Men Apocalypse has a built-in audience because, you know, it's the sixth film, comic books, people, and it's the superhero film of the week. Yeah, it's all right. I dug it, but, you know, didn't love it.
Maggie's Plan is a decent indie, but I think I still need to go and seek out Sing Street, which I keep hearing things about. So I think...
You've said that like 3 weeks in a row.
I know. So this is the weekend to just try and fit that in. But Maggie's Plan, especially also if you are... of a certain age with the biological clock ticking, and you're thinking about lifelong plans and just whether how destiny plays a role in certain things. Maggie's plan is thought-provoking. It's quirky.
It's intelligent.
It's intelligent.
I like listening to it.
It's intelligent and quirky. So if that sort of floats your boat, then check it out.
And a monster with 1,000 heads is not in a theater near you.
No.
It's, if you're in a major metropolitan city, it either was, is, or will be in like one theater for 1 week. But I like the message. Insurance companies are out to get you.
It is a good message, and I think it made me appreciate the need for Obamacare even more. Just my little political message shining through.
It's a political film.
It is a political film.
All right. On behalf of myself, Charlie Jewell, charliejewell.com.
And Hannah Buchdahl of chickflix.net.
Thank you for listening to the Cinema Clash.
Have a great Memorial Day weekend.